what you are?
My name is Anita Hockman, and I'm 28.
And where do you live now?
I'm living in Merchantville, New Jersey.
And where are you from originally?
Levittown, Pennsylvania. My family still lives there.
Not
very far, just over the bridge.
Nice. And you grew up in Levittown?
That's right.
And okay, what kind of a general background would in terms of what kind of Jewish home did you come from and what kind of neighborhood was it to grow up in?
I grew up as a Reform Jew from the very beginning. There weren't many Jews in my immediate neighborhood, but there is a relatively significant Jewish community in Levittown, depending on what section you lived in. Levittown being a historic sort of a place, it's divided into developments, and the Jews tended to congregate into a particular developments, and we didn't live in one of those. But I grew up with Jews around, and my family wasn't really very observant until I got into junior high and high school, and I became more involved in the synagogue and youth group, confirmation. And as I became more involved in the youth group, I brought my parents into the synagogue more, and they became more observant. And that's my basic background.
Did they celebrate holidays at home?
Yeah, we didn't do too much with festivals, like Sukkot, Shavuot. We didn't. But, you know, we were Hanukkah celebrators and Pesach and the basics, I guess. Not until we got more involved in the synagogue did we find ourselves at the synagogue for other festivals. But there wasn't a lot in the home, no.
So it was the synagogue that got you involved?
Yes.
And you started by going to school, going to Hebrew school?
Yeah, I was enrolled in the Hebrew school. I became bat mitzvah and stayed home for confirmation. And at that time, I became very involved with youth grouping. I went to Israel summer of 11th grade. And my social life was in the synagogue, much more so than it was in high school.
Was it a big Jewish community? Were there a lot of Jewish kids in your high school?
No. Mm-hmm. No. We had our share. I don't think it was. It's not like I was one of a half a dozen kids. I graduated with 1,100 kids in my high school. I don't know what the percentage was. There must have been, I don't know. 5,200, maybe more, 300 Jewish kids.
Is there any anti-Semitism?
No, I have a 10%.
So, and what about music? When did you, and how did you get interested?
I've always had an interest in music. When I was a kid, I played piano, took piano lessons. I was always involved in the choruses and the school plays and this and that, and mostly singing. I picked up guitar at some point in junior high school, I think. And there was always something at school to keep me interested in music.
What about general education? Was there anything in that that particularly interested you, or it was just...
No, my basic interests were always music and my Judaism and Jewish identity.
And where along the way did you begin to think about career possibilities?
I think at some point, excuse me, in high school, I don't remember exactly how this all came about. I seemed to have this feeling that it was just simple mathematics. I took my love for music and my love for Judaism and I put them together and I came up with Cantor. And nobody ever...
Did you know any women who had...
No, I had no role models. None. It never occurred to me that I couldn't or shouldn't be a Cantor.
Did anyone tell you that?
When no.
You told people... I assume that you were interested in doing that?
I didn't get a lot of flack, no. I don't remember any. I remember going to my rabbi and saying, I want to do this. What do you think? What should I do? And he gave me the HUC story and how many years it is and what you need to do. And he seemed to think the best idea for me at that time was to go for an undergraduate degree in something that interested me and then to go to Cantor School. Now, I'm not so sure if he wanted to make sure I had something to fall back on, thinking this is basically a man's
male-dominated career, and that he wanted me to be careful. I don't doubt that he believed I could do what I wanted to do, but I think he was watching out for me.
Not taking you seriously.
It's not that he wasn't taking me seriously. I think he was really concerned that should I have a problem, that I should have something to fall back on. And he saw the value of getting an undergraduate degree before you go into 5 years of intense study with people who would have been older than myself anyway. So I think it was a smart suggestion on his part, and I'm glad that I went there.
You did that. What did you?
My undergraduate degree is in music education with a vocal concentration.
Where did you?
Westchester University.
Which is where?
Which is in Westchester, Pennsylvania. At the time I went, it was Westchester State College. It has since changed.
And you went to that with the idea that you were going to go to HUC when you graduated?
Right. And at some point during college, I said, hey, I really enjoy teaching, and maybe I'll teach music in a high school somewhere. And I started to enjoy teaching, the idea of teaching music more and more. And I went to HUC to visit and to talk with some of the people. And I didn't come away feeling very positive about my experience. My impression from them was that they wanted to interview me and audition me, and that they seemed very positive about my being accepted. But I just, it's hard to explain. I didn't like the fact that you had to go for 5 years and then you received another bachelor's degree. I got the impression I'd have to take some courses over that I had already taken, and that they wouldn't let me pass it off. And I just came away with a very, I was just very uncomfortable in that atmosphere. The people did not make me feel very comfortable. And so I found out about grads. And I started attending grads college before I finished my undergraduate degree. In my senior year, I sort of overlapped. And I've been at grads ever since.
How long has that been?
That's been 7 years. But in that time, I've been through, this is now my second cantorial position. And once I started working, after I graduated from high school, it was much harder to keep up a regular schedule.
When did you get your first position?
It was during the last month of my senior year of college. I got a phone call from people at Temple Emmanuel in Millenbrook, New Jersey, saying that I knew a lot of people from that synagogue from my youth group experience. I was a song leader in the Nifty youth movement. And so I had traveled all over the East Coast, all through college as well as high school, mostly, especially during college, and I song led for retreats and youth group weekends and religious school weekends, and that's how I put myself through school. So I had made a lot of good connections, and these people called me and said, we know you're graduating from college, and we know you want to be a cantor. We have a part-time position that's opening, and we'd like you to come and audition for us. They called me. I didn't even know there was an opening. So when I heard about it, I wasn't interested because I thought, I don't want to be a cantor yet. I got other things I want to do. I thought I would substitute teach and stay in Westchester for a while because I liked the town. And my parents quickly pointed out to me that even just for experience sake, it would be good to take the interview, which I did, and I was offered the job. And that was my first position, which started right after High Holy Days, after I graduated in 79. At the time that I'm probably filling in a lot of gaps. I don't know if you have questions or whatever.
Well, just about, you just brought your parents into the picture. But they had been encouraging about this all the time?
Every step of the way. Every step of the way, they were supportive and encouraging and never showed any concern that I wouldn't be able to work because I was a woman or that I would want. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I've never really had any problem or confrontations with people over the fact that I'm a woman. I think my situation is unusual from talking to my colleagues. Maybe it was maybe it's an attitude thing that I was instilled with from the very beginning by people who didn't question my goals and by parents who were very supportive. I never thought I'd have a problem, and I really haven't had a problem. But
pretty good.
And everyone in your family has been supportive.
Everyone.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother.
What is he doing?
He works in a mail order firm, and he's married and had a baby about 2.5 weeks ago, his first child. And he and his wife are not terribly observant, or even their commitment is not as intense and as clear as mine has always been, but they have a good sense of their Judaism, and their child will be raised as a Jew, but it's not like my brother and I were cut from the same mold in terms of Jewish observance and our Jewish identity. It's very different.
So in what ways are you observant in your in your lifetime?
What generally or specifically?
No. Do you keep kosher?
No.
Did your parents?
No.
Did their parents?
My mother's parents did. Yes.
So you were exposed to it?
No, I never really knew my mother's parents.
So you were never really exposed to
it? Never
them.
Really,
it's
no.
Not something that was ever important in any aspect of Jewish
right.
life.
I can imagine it becoming important in my life. If and when I marry and have a family, it will be a consideration for my home. Right now, it's not important to me, and I have a great deal of respect for those who observe the laws of kosher, but it's not important in my life right now.
It isn't something that your anyone in your congregation has ever expected of you?
They don't expect it. Well, maybe. Inevitably, when I'm invited to a congregant's home for dinner, they will ask me if I keep kosher. But I think that that's a courtesy, and I suppose that's as it should be with any Jew, that you should have the sensitivity with any person to ask if they have any dietary restrictions. But I'm sure that they ask me more than they ask their Jewish friends that particular question. Sometimes, usually they're not surprised that I don't keep kosher, but I don't feel this sort of, I don't feel a responsibility to keep kosher because of my position in the congregation.
So, when you got your first job, you said, I don't want to be a cantor, or at least I don't want to be one now.
I wasn't quite ready to jump right into it, right?
But you still had, you still thought you eventually would.
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea to begin to get the experience. It was a part-time job, just involved Friday nights, Saturdays when there was a bar mitzvah, preparing choir for High Holy Days and High Holy Days and Chagim. And there was no work during the week other than the choir rehearsal. When we were preparing for High Holy Days, but not throughout the year. And there were other things that I wanted to do. I had an opportunity to teach. I taught in a girls' Catholic high school part-time. I taught in another local high school part-time. I taught at a synagogue religious school in Pennsylvania. And I did a couple other odds and ends. And I got a chance to try all kinds of different things. And I realized once I took the audition and got the job at Willingboro that it was the best thing for me. And I was just being silly.
Why? What do you mean being silly?
I just wasn't, you know, I was impetuous and I was... on the verge of being a college graduate, and I didn't want to be that serious so soon, and I didn't see it for the tremendous opportunity that it was. And my parents were right in encouraging me to take the interview, and I probably figured, you know, these people called me from out of the blue, there'll be jobs. You know, if they called me when I'm ready, there'll be a job. Maybe that's what the attitude was. I don't really remember very well, but I did go for it.
What's your idea? Your overall idea or philosophy or approach to what a cantor is, and has that changed since when you first decided you wanted to be?
I imagine that my concept of what a cantor is in the very beginning was that a cantor is the person who the cantor is music, the cantor sings, the cantor is responsible for anything that has to do with music in the synagogue. Kan was responsible for the liturgy. Maybe the Kan was a teacher from time to time. But basically, the Kan was somebody up there who sang for the congregation. And that was the kind of Kan I had. He was a performer. He is a wonderful man. Has a wonderful voice. But there wasn't always a lot of participation. And he was, his style was that of a performer. And today, when I think about what a canter is, I don't always think about my canter. Today, a canter to me is someone who encourages congregants to participate. Someone who prays in such a way as to encourage participation. I don't really feel, although I'm a messenger of the congregation, those times when I am most uncomfortable with what I'm doing is when I am singing alone. Not so much because I'm not confident in my voice or my command of the liturgy, but I really want everybody to know that it's their Judaism and it's their prayer service and it's their opportunity to daven, and I want to encourage people to join with me and hopefully maybe inspire people to let go a little bit and to explore prayer for themselves. A canter to me is a teacher at all times. A canter hopefully is a musical, is an authority when it comes to Jewish music, is an authority when it comes to any Jewish topic, or most Jewish topics, the basics, Jewish life. These are all areas I'm still in the process of working on and developing for myself. That's a lot of it. The canter, I think, is an inspirer. Mm-hmm. And a teacher. How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well here.
Okay.
What about the good question? What about the relationship between the cantor and the rabbi?
In my synagogue or in general?
Well, both. What would be your ideal relationship between a cantor and a rabbi?
My ideal
relationship. How does your real one stack up?
My ideal relationship between a cantor and a rabbi is exactly that which I have with my rabbi. I don't feel that we are at odds with each other at any point, over any point. Neither one intimidates the other. He is my boss to a large extent. He is my friend. He's my teacher. He is probably one of my greatest supporters.
Was he here when you came?
Yes, he was.
He's one of the
people. He started this congregation. Yes. I really have a spectacular relationship with my rabbi, which I imagine is unusual from speaking with my colleagues about their situations. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
What do you think are their particularly good aspects of the relationship?
His support, his encouragement. He's always encouraging me to stretch and to try new things. I gave a sermon in September on Nisi Naitos, and I spoke for about 20-25 minutes. And a year ago, I wouldn't have dreamed of getting up and speaking. It's funny, I can sing, and it doesn't make me nervous at all. I don't even think about it. But speaking, you know, I was very nervous, and he was very supportive and very encouraging, and he's always stretching me. Other things have come up. I had a situation about a year ago where a friend had gotten me in touch with her aunt who was dying of cancer and wanted me to speak with the woman and help her make arrangements for her memorial service after she died. She planned to be cremated. So it was a very sort of a tricky situation, and I had never been directly involved with any kind of funeral arrangements. I had sung at funerals before, but I had never quite done anything like this. And I spoke with Rabbi Newlander in panic before I called this woman I mean, I was panicking for millions of reasons. One, because I was calling a dying woman, you know, and I didn't know how to talk to her. I had no background in this kind of thing. He was wonderful. He was there for me every step of the way, never encouraged me to do it if I felt I could do it, if I felt I couldn't for any reason, that I owed it to the woman to explain to her that I felt I couldn't handle it. He was tremendous, and he has always helped me in situations like that to see that I'm capable of a lot of good things. He helps me, he encourages me to be flexible and creative. I think we complement each other tremendously in terms of our strengths and our weaknesses. And we are good friends. How about you?
Did he introduce the guitar?
You mean when I came?
Did you say that the person
there was a cantor before me,
who
started basically when this congregation started. This was a break off from another congregation, and it started right. And it started as most of them do, probably in somebody's home, and then it went to a high school auditorium or something like that, and it progressed and has moved into this building. And all along, they had another cantor who played the guitar, and. He had a much more, before I started working here, I think the big difference was, I don't know how to put this, it was a little more wild, in a sense. It was a lot looser. A lot looser, but I think that the congregation grew up over the years, slowly but surely, and by the time this gentleman made Aliyah and was prepared to leave the congregation, they were ready for something a little different, and somebody to pull things together a little bit more, bring a certain kind of integrity to the service, which was lacking before. Not that it was a service that lacked integrity totally, but like it was a little... mayhemish, I think.
Can you point to specific aspects of the service that you feel are your contributions?
The congregation's repertoire of music has expanded, I would say, 10 times what it was before I came. They knew about a dozen different songs. They have learned a lot of different songs, a lot of different melodies for different parts of the liturgy. They have I hope they have a better sense of the structure of the service in general. And, I don't know, that's a tough question. Because I wasn't a congregant here before. And I'm going by what I heard about how things were before I came. I think the service is a little tighter now than it was.
What about the sitter that's
The congregation compiled a siddur themselves. They chose not to go with Union Prayer Book or Gates of Prayer when that came out.
The red book that's sitting on your desk.
The Tahila Baby. Mm-hmm. This was put out by this congregation, by Sudbury,
right.
Bethel. So we did sort of what they did, although ours is not as polished as this is. And I think that the philosophy at the time was to provide different readings that related to us.
Who chose the readings?
I think the rabbi, possibly with some help from congregants. Now this book is about 10, 12 years old. We are in the process of prayer book revision. When our new prayer book comes out, you may have noticed this book doesn't really have the complete liturgy, Hebrew. All the Hebrew is not there. And there's a lot of sort
of... But it has more Hebrew in parts that one expects to find
in a Reformed
congregation.
Yeah. We tend to pull a little more...
For instance, the complete Hebrew for
the
Shema.
And
the
Shema.
And for the Amidah.
Yeah.
And for the Aleinu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's unusual. Our new prayer book will have everything, I believe. in addition to timely
reading. Are they considering doing something like the Doug Sudbury publishing?
Yeah, I think so. Because a lot of people walk in and end up wanting to walk out and take the book home. There's some truth
there
about it.
There are many, many interesting readings
mm-hmm.
in interesting places.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a conscious effort was made to come up with something with integrity and yet something different that would speak to everybody where they're at.
And do you yourself decide what music you're going to do where, or do you do that in conjunction with the rabbi?
Generally, a couple of days before Friday night service, the rabbi will give me an outline of what the service is going to be. Looks like this. This doesn't help the tape recorder, but this is one. And he just lists the page numbers.
It looks sort of like Hebrew and maybe a little Arabic.
Well, that's his handwriting. But he'll end up AH means that's my things I'm responsible for in the service. And then he will, just before services begins, he will go around the congregation and ask people to take a reading. So during the service, you'll hear people from all over the room are reading out loud. And he goes by his outline.
Well, it was interesting that room is perfectly square. It doesn't have any stained glass windows
mm-hmm.
or any windows to
very
speak
plain,
of.
Very conservative.
But the chairs, the way the chairs are set up, it gives people participating very much a sense of being.
Exactly. Right. It's set up Sephardic style. And on Saturdays in particular, the rabbi explains the origin of the setup, and he goes on to explain that never was it intended that that the service be going on way, 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 way up there at the front of the room on that stage somewhere where you can sort of see them and you can hear them because there's a PA system or whatever, but that and we were never intended to participate in the service by looking at the backs of each other's heads, and participation is encouraged by being able to see one another and share with one another and smile at one another.
So he had a lot of input into how the
absolutely
the room is structured.
Absolutely. This is his baby. With a lot of respect for him.
What are your specific duties as the cantor?
You might ask, what are my specific duties as the cantor? And I would reply.
I will.
Okay.
What are your specific duties?
Okay. Well, you saw some of them tonight. I Davin. We can call it that. Because it's so good. I prefer to call it that. Fridays and Saturdays for two bar mitzvah services, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Have holy days, holidays, the whole schmear. I prepare a choir who sings at least a half a dozen times throughout the year, an adult choir of 44 parts. The biggest part...
Do they perform other than services?
Yes, they perform sometimes at the geriatric home. We've been invited to go into the community. And we have performed at the Jewish Choral Festival at Jeshurun in Philadelphia, where other synagogue choirs participate. I think we're the only choir from New Jersey that participates. We've done that for the last 2 years. Very exciting for me and for the group. It's one of the few opportunities we get to sing and then hear applause after we're done singing. It's very exhilarating. That's a particular love of mine, working with the choir. I would say the biggest part of my job is training B'nai Mitzvah students. I have 70 students on the average per year. They start their training a year ahead of time. It's my sole responsibility. I have someone who works for me part-time as a sort of tutor/assistant. And all of the students receive private instruction. And I put a lot of time and energy into getting to know the kids and their families and to making it a complete experience.
Did you decide what you teach them, what they will do up
there? No, there was more or less a pretty a structure that was here, right, an established structure when I got here. What I did was organized it a little bit more. Cantor before me was not known for his sense of organization, and I found all kinds of ways to sort of to make some shortcuts for myself, because it's overwhelming to deal with 70 students on a one-on-one basis. And I've made some other changes and adjustments and alterations here and there to, I think, to upgrade the way the machine works. And sometimes it is it's a machine, almost like a factory. And once I got all the organization out of the way, then I could address it on a personal level, so that the kids wouldn't feel that they were working for a factory, and they get a lot of special attention.
You also do weddings, funerals?
Yeah, I don't do them too often. I'm not often asked to sing at a wedding. I think that's because people don't know that they can have a caner at the wedding, but for them the important thing is the rabbi. But not too often. I performed the wedding myself last June, something I'm not too sure I want to do again. it's just a very intense experience, and the sense of responsibility. And it was just overwhelming. Plus, they were two of my best friends, so the whole thing was very intense and very emotional for me. And as I said, I handled the memorial service for this wedding last year, so I do these things, but not very well.
Now, there was, among the announcements tonight, included one about a program that you're going to be doing, a music program outside of the services.
Oh, yeah?
You weren't there? You didn't hear?
That wasn't for next week. This is for something in May? I wasn't listening.
Oh.
Because I usually know all the announcements.
I think you said something about new music.
Oh, they were just, next week the rabbi has the weekend off because there's no B'nai Mitzvah services on Saturday. So every winter the rabbi gets a weekend off and I get a weekend off, and it's his weekend off. So I will conduct services myself, and probably my shtick will be to teach a couple of new songs in place of a sermon.
You don't normally do musical programs outside of doing services?
Occasionally I do. I like to bring people into the synagogue to expose the congregants to different kinds of music. I try and...
You don't have a structured program to
no.
do that.
Yeah. It's hard to juggle everything when the Bar Mitzvah program takes so much of my time.
Do you do other musical activities outside of the synagogue?
No, I wish. I really wish. I would like to be in a choral group of some sort, or even like a quartet, a small ensemble. I'm just dying to participate in something new. Secular things as well. I miss that a lot. My undergraduate training was had nothing to do with Jewish music, and I became very involved in it. Spending time in practice rooms at the piano and singing with different instruments. I really miss that a lot. I feel very isolated here.
Do you have other kinds of music, things that you listen to or that you do yourself when you're not doing Jewish music?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of popular music, like rock and roll, and jazz, classical music. I'll listen to anything once, at least. I'll try it. I have a terrific record collection. I would like to branch out even more someday.
But you said you don't have time. Now, you said something about having commitments Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evening. Are those synagogue?
Well, Monday nights, I'm here because the religious school is in full swing and the seventh graders are here. So I see the Bar Mitzvah students when they're here for religious school. Generally, that's when their appointments are. I take them out of class briefly. So they're here Monday nights, so I am as well. Tuesday nights, I have choir rehearsals. Wednesday nights, it depends. Sometimes there's a board meeting. Sometimes I have to call another meeting for Bar Mitzvah families of, you know, February 1987 Bar Mitzvah families. I get them together to start the children's training. All kinds of things come up on different committees, youth group committee. Ritual community meetings I attend, prayer book community meetings I attend.
Is that your
every
idea?
Weekday
or
afternoon. Pardon me?
It's the ritual committee.
No, I think that's unexpected to be honest. Rather than, as well as the prayer book committee. youth group that was that's an independent sort of thing, something I'm interested in, and something that also that they asked me to become involved in. What kinds of things that bring me out on Wednesday nights? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday afternoons I'm here. With bar mitzvah students for the most part. And making plays for the choir and all kinds of other odds and ends. Lots of odds and ends. Lots of little pieces. I'm here all day Saturday. I have a junior congregation from 9 to 10 in the morning on Saturday when we daven. And the kids learn a little bit about the parasha for the week and then the service.
What would you say are the sources of your repertoire, and do you spend a certain amount of your time looking for a new repertoire?
Several different sources. One is just my background from high school when I was song leader, and I used to sit around with friends and we used to share songs, folk songs, and different melodies for liturgy, a lot of Debbie Friedman influence, Mike Isaacson, Jeff Klepper. I'm a reform niftyite, and I ate, slept, drank, lived that kind of music, that contemporary folk style, for years. And this congregation had it before I came. They have it now. They will probably always have it. And I fit in nicely. I mean, I fit into the puzzle perfectly for them because of my background. So a lot of the music comes from there. A lot of it comes from my background as a child growing up in my synagogue, and the free music that I heard all the time. All kinds of music from that part of my life. And I do, I look around. I have a lot of resource material. Gratz College is a tremendous resource. I try and learn new melodies.
That's programmed into your routine? To spend a certain amount of time doing it?
Actually, it's not. That's not a bad idea. I may take your suggestion. Today I will. If there's a need.
Do you get bored? Doing
the same thing? Yeah, I do. Sure I do. I'm always looking. Tonight you heard a nigun that we learned together.
I'm always. Started to sing it, and I thought it didn't take you long
uh-huh.
to.
I'm always collecting nigunim because this congregation really enjoys singing them. And I get bored with the ones that we do, and that was a great opportunity to pick up a couple of new ones. Sometimes it's a stamina issue, that it's easier to do the same melodies because I didn't have enough time that week or that month to go flipping through my books and to find something new to alleviate my boredom. And at the same time, I can sing the same song every week and sing it differently and enjoy it. The looks on my congregants' faces when I sing a song that they really love, even though I've already sung it 5 million times, they really love it. That makes it an enjoyable experience for me.
Are there particular ones that you really love?
Yeah. Tonight, I sang a Sim Shalom, which is a Debbie Friedman melody. And then I went into an Oseh Shalom by a woman named Debbie Pinto. And I think everyone. And that Oseh Shalom is a particular favorite. I think the congregation really enjoys singing that. I don't get too many opportunities to sing by myself because we encourage participation here. And when there is a time for me to sing by myself, usually if I've sung the piece two or three times, everybody's singing with me, whether it's a solo piece or not. It's hard to discourage them from singing along. I enjoy singing all kinds of things.
I noticed there's a part of the service tonight, basically right after the sermon until the end, where you don't use the guitar. Is that typical?
There's a couple spots. I don't use, you're talking about Elena. Mm-hmm. That was really it after the sermon, Elena saying anything. Then Amida, we daven as you might see in a traditional congregation. The first part of the Shema before we do the English translation. It's all like a cappella. Baruch Hu.
Did that just happen? Or were there any conscious decisions involved in that?
That's basically how they were done before I came.
How did you know?
It was Rabbi Noah. Through it. I also I observed the service before the Kanner left. And there are other things will come up that I will opt not to use my guitar. I think after a while you have to realize, you have to, a lot of people are uncomfortable with guitar for the obvious reasons, those who come from very traditional backgrounds that want to hear a musical instrument no matter what it is. Some people feel it makes a mockery of the liturgy. I can't agree with that. However, if I were to play my guitar for something like the Amidah or the Shema, then I think it's getting out of hand, and I think you have to know where to draw the line with the liturgy. Some things really lend themselves beautifully to guitar accompaniment, but it would never occur to me to use my guitar for certain areas of the service. I think it's inappropriate.
Please determine. Wait, no, we still have
okay. Do you ever step back from it and ask yourself,
what am I doing here? Sure. A lot of times. Sometimes I wonder if I really could do anything else. It scares me to think that maybe this is all I can do. Although I know I can I could teach. I could always go back to teaching music. There are times when it really comes to bear on my private life, my social life.
In what way?
Well, I can't go into the community without running into somebody I know. And I really value my sense of privacy, being a single person. Somehow I think there's even more of a curiosity about what I do and where I go. People have said as much to me. They're kind of intrigued with what my lifestyle is, and so I really try and keep it to myself because they could just climb inside of my life and make me crazy.
Do you live nearby?
Yeah, I do. That's important because I need to be here. Sometimes I need to be here. At the last minute I can get a call to come over for whatever. I think it's also important that I live near the community because my job is not just in this building, but it's I'm a figure in the community. And I understand it. I don't always like it that much, but I understand it and I respect it. But it's hard to walk into a supermarket and run into a congregant who's curious about what you eat and what you're buying and what you're wearing in the supermarket or in a restaurant. Who are you with? Can you afford to eat in that restaurant? It's hard to live with that all the time. It's hard to be a celebrity in your own community of sorts. It's doubly hard because there are those people who I recognize as congregants. Then there are congregants who I don't get to see, really, who maybe show up for high holy days, and they see me, but I never really see them. And so there's those people out there who are seeing me, and there are other people in the community who, you know, I'm an unusual, I'm a novelty in the community. And so I stick out even more, I think, as a Jewish professional. So there are people who have been to bar mitzvahs here or just know who I am. And I often find people walking by me and whispering to the people that are facing the camera. You know, or people behind me in a restaurant or people across the room pointing at me. I can't stand that.
You're a hairdresser.
Yeah, it's times like that when I say, what am I doing here?
Do you come up with an answer?
Yeah, sure. There's so many. There's so much. It's such a fulfilling, engrossing, exhilarating thing to do. To connect with people at the most joyous and the most tragic times in their lives, to be there for people, to learn from them. There are very few things in life that anyone can do that matches the height,
the highs and the lows of this clinging position. And when I really think about it seriously, I don't imagine that I would trade it, that I really would want to do anything else. Everything has its good side and its bad side. And as much as I dislike lack of privacy and being noticed in the community so often, there are rewards that far outweigh the difficulties of this position. There's nothing like it.
Do you see yourself staying here over an extended period?
Yes.
This is home.
This is home for a while. I would like to know what else is out there. I know this is a very unique congregation. I know that this congregation, in a lot of ways, speaks to me. If I were to join a congregation, if I were looking to become a member of a synagogue, this particular synagogue would be a primary consideration for me. And that makes me feel even better about being here. I'm not in conflict. I'm not in any kind of a spiritual or educational or philosophical conflict with this congregation. I feel very comfortable here. People have taken me into their homes, and they've been very good to me. I'm really very happy here. Plus, we may be growing. The synagogue has, I came here 4 years ago, we've picked up 200 new families since then. We're now almost at 600 families. We're talking about building or moving or whatever. And I want to be here at that exciting transitional time for this congregation. I want to be part of the growth in the building. So I imagine I'm here for a while.
Are you satisfied with your working conditions in the summer and terms?
If I'm dissatisfied with working conditions, it's because so much of my time has to be taken up by one particular thing. The Bar Mitzvah program. And I would like to have the time to be a little more creative and to branch out, to teach adults in the school. They've asked me to do all kinds of things, but I just don't have the time. In that respect, I'm dissatisfied because I'm really wrapped up in one particular thing that takes a lot of my time. I'm basically very satisfied with my salary. I think I'm in an unusual situation where they recognize.
You think that they're paying you what they would pay you if you remained?
I know they are. I started at a higher salary than the gentleman before me left at.
Were his duties and his time put in comparable?
He didn't put as much energy into the Bar Mitzvah training, and so he taught in other areas of the school. And he kind of flitted around a lot.
Come in! He was teaching in other areas.
Yeah, and he really was a very scattered sort of an individual. And to this day, there are a lot of jokes about Terry, who was a wonderful guy, but never seemed to really get his act together. And I brought a lot of organization that never existed before he came here. And so my energies are in different areas, and I would say probably I am doing more than Terry did. Probably. I think that's the way I approach things in general. I don't know if it's because they ask more of me than they did of them. Possibly they do. But I don't feel that I'm discriminated against because I'm a woman at all. I think I have an unusually wonderful situation. My benefits are good. They pay for for graduate school. Mm-hmm. I have a health plan. I can't complain.
Are you involved in any other kind of Jewish activities?
Well, I'm a student at Bratz.
Do you have any other kinds of interests? Any interests in Israel or politics?
No, I haven't really. I don't have a great passion for anything in particular. I'm kind of looking around and exploring. I'll try different workshops and different things here and there. It's hard when you work on Friday night and when you work all day Saturday. I would really like to go to some place like B'nai Or and experience Shabbat or a holiday there. But when you're so caught up and when you're required to be somewhere for all of the Chagim and Shabbatot, it's hard. I would like to explore my spirituality. I would like to explore davening in other situations.
Well, that's an interesting statement about exploring your spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's something that you don't connect with what you do as a cantor?
It connects with what I do as a cantor, but not as much as I would like, and not as intensely personal as I would like. Sometimes my sense of spirituality is more connected with a group than it is with me. And I don't really get a chance to be by myself to pray or to experience my Judaism as a participant and not as a leader. And I really have a strong need right now to do that, to go someplace where I'm not going to be called upon as a cantor. To participate, to sit back and to let my own personal spiritual sense come through. I think it's
How do you see your job in the spiritual terms?
In part, my job means helping other people connect with their spiritual sense through music, through my own love for what I do, my own love for being Jewish, hopefully through an osmosis sort of a thing, and through teaching, through my manner and my style. I hope to help people to get in touch with themselves on a spiritual level and to encourage them to explore their own sense of spirituality.
What about the religion or the sense of being religious and tradition? Do you feel that there's something of that involved in what you do?
Sure. Well, I hope to educate and to let them know what is theirs, what they are, the tremendous gift that they have, the treasure that their Jewishness is, historically, traditionally, Jewishly, musically. To help them to begin to want to explore and to know. We have people who come from very traditional backgrounds who are members of this congregation, people who have no background whatsoever. We have a lot of Jews by choice in our congregation. I'm always in a constant state of learning. The learning process is always going on. For me, as I learn from my congregants in terms of what their needs are, they all have stories to tell. Am I getting off the track?
Did you say that it's an important aspect to you personally of what you do and why you do it?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
When we talk about tradition and some role in the cantor in terms of being passing on a sense of tradition.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't when we started out in terms of why you wanted to be a cantor. That wasn't something that you brought up and said that was important to me. Why I became a cantor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel much more committed now to be a link in the chain, to help to pass things on.
Is Is that something that you really want to do that's important to you, or it's something that you see as think a about responsibility?
Sure. I see it as a responsibility. I like the idea that I know when our kids walk out of my office or out of this building that they've had a positive experience. And although through the years, they may not choose to be very observant for whatever reasons. My hope is that they will always have this. I hear so many people, adults, who talk about bad experiences when they were growing up in a seminar. They don't have too many fond memories of what it was like. Hebrew school was, you know, a drudgery and just a pain in the neck. And I really like to think that adults and kids especially are walking out of here and will take with them a very positive, warm, important, connecting sort of a feeling to being Jewish that will last with them for their entire lives. And so that when their kids are becoming bar mitzvah, they can say, you know, it feels great to be Jewish, and this is why, and this is what's important to you. Because when I was younger, I learned what's important, and as I grew older, I learned what it meant.
What about your kids? Do you see yourself as great family?
I do and I don't. Depends on what day you ask me. Today? No, I don't really. I have a hard time imagining that I will be away for a month. Tomorrow, I could tell you the exact opposite. I am presently not involved in a relationship, and so I think that makes it kind of hard to imagine such things happening. I think deep down, my bottom line says I would like to be married, and I would like to have a family, but I don't know that that's ever going to happen for me. I don't know.
Do any of your confidants have any opinions?
Everybody's always telling me, you know, I know somebody I should fix you up.
I got a guy for you.
Right, and it never comes to be. I never meet these guys. And a lot of people tell me that they wish that they knew somebody. Mostly people don't know anybody.
If you want to meet someone, how do you go?
I haven't figured that out yet. Because I don't do the boxing, and I don't like the singles group. So I'm kind of cool.
Does being a cantor have any effect on your
Absolutely.
Decision, let's say, to do singles?
No, it doesn't have an effect on my decision, but I think being a cantor makes it very difficult to meet people. Meeting people in the synagogue is not very conducive to developing a romantic relationship, or even thinking about developing a romantic relationship. I find a lot of men are intimidated, not by me, but by my title, before they even get a chance to find out that I'm not an intimidating person. At least I hope I'm not. It just would never occur to them to become involved with a person such as a cantor. They'd be afraid that they'd have to watch everything they said all the time, and cantors are not human beings, just like rabbis aren't human beings, and it's very, very difficult to meet men.
Do you think that the fact that you're a woman affects that in some way?
In terms
of men thinking about what I want my wife to be, that it can just be that interesting idea of
things? I think that they imagine a cantor to be holier than most. And that they don't want a wife who's holy, I suppose. I think that the problems in this area are pretty obvious. I don't know if women have a harder time meeting men. If women cantors have a harder time meeting men than male cantors have meeting women. My guess is women cantors do have a harder time. But I think women in general have a harder time. That's a whole other can of worms.
What would be your ideal lifestyle? You can live the ideal life that you would choose for yourself.
What a wild question. What an incredible question.
I'll give you a week to think about it.
Yeah. I guess I would to be able to do what I do, but to be able to take a Shabbat every now and then and spend it the way I want to spend it.
I understand there is a thing around that called the Cantor Sabbath. I know at least one guy in New York who had said that he got every seventh Sabbath off to go and do something else.
Oh yeah? Well, I gotta find out about this. I really need to. See, when we have a bar bat mitzvah the following day on Saturday, either the rabbi or I will have the evening of Shabbat. That's we have the responsibility to the congregation and the family to be here. My ideal lifestyle would be to live in the city with somebody I care very deeply about and share someone with whom I can share my life. I would have more time to explore music and to sing.
What would you like to do musically?
I'd like to take guitar lessons. I would like to take piano lessons. I'd like to take banjo lessons.
I've been harboring a secret desire to play the banjo for years.
Uh-huh.
The Yiddish Folk Music Institute made me decide absolutely what I used to do.
Good. Let me know how that goes. I'd like to play
and
harmonica.
And start a band. Definitely.
Okay. Let me know. I'd like to play harmonica. I would like to sing in a group. I'd like to sing in a barbershop quartet. I would like to be able to, I would like to have the time to go to more concerts. I would like to, I'd like to work with pottery. I mean, there's all kinds of things, you know?
Do you live by yourself?
Yes, I do. Next question.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think is important about you or about you as Cantor or as a woman Cantor?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Tell everyone.
I don't really think so. You asked a lot of good questions, and I fumbled my answers a lot. One of the things that I think I already pointed out is that my situation is atypical in many, many ways. As a woman, it's atypical.
Why do you think that happened to you?
To me, of all people?
What have you done to deserve this?
Yeah. If it's attributable to anything from my own perspective to what I've done to deserve this, I think probably the fact that it never occurred to me that it would be difficult to become a king, that I would have a hard time finding a job, that people would discriminate against me, never occurred to me, and so I've never had the problem. I've always been very willing to learn what I had to learn in order to. When I first started here, I had never trained a bar mitzvah student. I couldn't read Torah. I didn't know Torah at all. And so I've always been very willing to learn and quickly to be able to adapt to my situation. I like to learn another job. It's nerve-wracking. I don't know what else I did to deserve this. I think being at this particular synagogue was so much of being in the right place at the right time. I mentioned to you before we were doing this, that this congregation looked for a canon for about 5 months. And when I heard that, and originally I wasn't interested in auditioning, when I heard that after 5 months they were still looking, I thought, yeah, maybe they're looking for something that I have. Who knows? I came and auditioned and was hired at the interview. They've been looking for so long. So I really think I was in the right place at the right time and didn't even know it. A lot of things have
come to me.
But
you knew enough to do it when you found it.
You mean to take the job? Listen, it's possibly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I mean, it's an unusual opportunity to be offered a full-time position as a cantor in a congregation that is flexible and intriguing and exciting and young and creative. I think it really is an unusual opportunity in any cantor's life. And I would be crazy not to take this job. Okay.
the interviewee here, Lisa Nita Hoffman.